Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Once upon a time, there was a writer named Laura. Laura Ingalls Wilder is one of the most beloved authors of all time and certainly of our region. She died in 1957, but her legacy lives on in her 8 Little House on the Prairie books. She kept no formal journals, but her letters have now been collected into one impressive volume. Bill Anderson is a historian, educator, and author of 25 books. His latest release from HarperCollins is called The Selected Letters of Laura Ingalls Wilder. He joins us today from Lapeer, Michigan. Bill, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Well, thank you so much. This is publication day for the book, and it's nice to celebrate it with a conversation with you.
Excellent. In the introduction of this book, you say that this is the final collection of unpublished writings for Laura. Quote, there no longer remains a well of her words left to print. That makes me feel a little bit sad. Can you put that into perspective for us?
Well, we can also be very glad that Wilder was a lifelong writer, and she saved nearly every scrap of paper that she wrote on. And, of course, the Wilder sensational book of last year was her autobiography, Pioneer Girl, mm-hmm. that South Dakota Historical Society published and was a runaway bestseller. So that was very groundbreaking as far as Wilder books. And then coincidentally, this book of letters was in the talking stage. And now it is more or less a sequel to the autobiography.
Who was Laura Ingalls Wilder writing to and why? What does the book cover as far as scope and scale?
Well, it's pretty much a compilation of her letters to family, friends, business associates, and the latter part of her life was correspondence with her agent, her editors, and then the huge, vast group of fans that wrote to her, and mm-hmm. she was very diligent about responding, took that very seriously. Must have been overwhelming to walk down to the rural mailbox and pull out 40 or 50 letters every day and 900 greeting cards on her birthday and so on, but she answered them all.
Now, you've studied her for a long time and written several books about her. Did you learn anything new going through these letters?
Well, I had used the letters very much in writing my previous books, such as Laura Ingalls Wilder, A Biography, because, as you mentioned earlier, she didn't keep journals or diaries through her adult life, except when she was on a trip. When she came back to South Dakota with her husband, Al Manso, she kept a little travel diary. But we don't know about those 60 years of her adulthood or more. And that's too bad, but we know her very well through her books. We know about her youth and her childhood, early married life in South Dakota. But the letters are the best evidence to know this person as a mother, a wife, a businesswoman, and finally an author.
How did she balance those different roles? Obviously, she worked with her daughter, other than just being her mother. Tell us a little bit about that relationship and how it shows up in the letters between her and Rose.
Well, Rose Wilder Lane was the literary star of the Wilder family long before Laura was known outside of the Ozarks, because they settled in Mansfield, Missouri in 1894. Rose was part of the great movement of young women to go to the cities and get an occupation in the early 20th century. She drifted into journalism, became a very well-known short story writer, novelist, biographer, reporter, and had a very distinguished career going through the 1920s. And wrote 2 novels about Dakota, Let the Hurricane Roar and Freeland, which were bestsellers. And it really was the Depression that formed this alliance between Laura and Rose in writing the Little House books. both the Wilders and Rose were wiped out with the stock market crash, and although Laura and Almanzo Wilder were retired farmers, the economic future looked rather bleak, and Rose's top paid fiction was really hit upon by the stock market crash because magazines simply couldn't afford to pay her $1,500 for a short story as she'd been used to. So then developed the idea of an autobiography, Pioneer Girl, and that did not sell, but Laura transformed her early memories into a children's book, Little House in the Big Woods. And essentially Rose, through her wide literary connections, placed that book with Harper and Brothers at that time, now HarperCollins. And Laura thought she'd do the single book, but the story was so popular that her publishers and children clamored for more. And that launched her on this latter-day career in her 60s and 70s as the author of the 9 Little House books. Rose was very helpful. She was a marvelous editor as well as a creator of original material. And Rose, more or less, was Laura's literary coach. And when she was living in close proximity with her mother, I imagine they went over these manuscripts over the teacups or after supper or around the house. But when Rose returned to New York City, they had to do all of this collaboration through correspondence. And many, many dozens of those letters still exist. And they truly illuminate the writer's craft in the creation of the Little House books and this symbiotic relationship between mother and daughter.
Now, Harper is the same publishing house that you're working with today. How does that make you feel?
Well, when I think about it, it's quite an honor because after doing a lot of research and my summers as a college student were spent in DeSmet being a tour guide at the historic homes there, I finally did a book. And Harper published it, and they continue to ask me for more and more and more. So I've done quite a body of work on the Wilders, their home places, biographical books. I edited and collected some of their unpublished writings and several books. And it's nice to be in that publishing house which first brought the Little House books to fame.
What is it about Laura and her legacy and her writing that continues to fascinate you, that you continue to look into it and learn more?
Well, I think that from being sort of discounted for many years as children's books, this has changed. And I think that what she did was record the story of a quintessential pioneer American family. And she really wrote one of the great American frontier stories in her series. And those books certainly have staying power. They're read all over the world and in many, many languages and have never been out of print since 1932.
Are there topics that she never addresses in her letters, like noticeable things that there are gaps in?
Well, of all the nearly 500 letters that I examined, I kept thinking, isn't this amazing that we have all this documentation still today? But as I explained in the introduction to this book, there are some pretty significant gaps. And I told the story of the day in 1946 when the Ingalls family home in DeSmet was cleared out, and the neighbors saw these flurries of papers going out the second floor window onto a flatbed truck to go to the dump grounds. And the Ingalls were such hoarders and savers that we know that a lot of the letters that passed between the family members and that Laura wrote home from Missouri were lost that day. But on the bright side, many of them have survived, and I tried to give a sampling which showed the kind of person that Laura Ingalls Wilder was.
Bill, I'm wondering if you might leave us with an excerpt of the book, a letter that you'd like to share to give us a flavor of how Laura corresponded.
Well, one of her most steady correspondents in South Dakota was Aubrey Sherwood, the editor of the Desmet News. Mm. And Aubrey was a wonderful newspaper man, but he was a booster of his hometown of Desmet, knew the Ingalls family, grew up down the street from them, and it was really due to him that South Dakota paid attention to Wilder. He founded the Laura Ingalls Wilder Memorial Society there, and without Aubrey, what exists there in Desmet probably simply wouldn't be there. Hmm. And Laura really appreciated the promotion that Aubrey supplied in his newspaper, and also having a connection with South Dakota. She and her husband, Almanzo, loved South Dakota, and they made trips back there, and never quite got over missing the prairies. And in one of her letters to Aubrey Sherwood in 1951, she expressed her appreciation to him for all he'd done to keep her books alive in her hometown. And she mentioned that often I have a letter telling of some tourist visit to Desmet and how nicely they have been treated by you and shown around to the places of interest. So that was really the precursor to the tourist business that Desmet now experiences, because people would go to the Desmet news office if they'd ask in a store on the main street, and they'd say, yes, go see Mr. Sherwood. And he was willing to drop his work and show people around his community. And Wilder really appreciated that, and he was one of the great South Dakotans, as well as Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Bill Anderson's The Selected Letters of Laura Ingalls Wilder is on sale today from HarperCollins. Bill, thank you for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
We'll see you next time.
All right. Bye-bye.
Up next, John Locke and John Miller on the health of Midwestern studies and why a focus on the heart of America matters more than you realize. We'll take a quick break. You're listening to Dakota Midday, SDPB Radio.